Welcome to the CRE Shark Eye Show, where we discuss commercial real estate. This is your host, Ishai Breslauer. Here we meet every Monday to talk commercial real estate and prop tech. We will dive deep into the different asset classes, discuss the market, talk about the new and exciting technologies, meet key people in the industry, and get some inspiration. Let's begin. Hey guys, before we start, I just want to point out the 6 best secrets for commercial real estate. It's a free download. Go to the text side and you will find it. It has absolutely great information, completely free, how to become a landlord, how to determine the value of a property, or creative financing for commercial real estate. All of it is completely free. Go download it. Also, I want to point out my CRE crash course. It's a 2-week must-have program with a must-have skills for commercial real estate, like investment strategies, the must-have financial terms, how a deal is done. Go take a look at it, go to the text side and click on the link. And now let's continue with our program. Hey guys, how are you? This is Ishai Breslauer, your host of the CRE Shark Eye Show. Today we talk real estate law. We have an expert with us, Adam Lightman Bailey. Has been in real estate law since 2000. I'm not going to read you everything that basically he is known for, but meaning I started reading and I got tired. Why? Because he is, he was rated the top 100 attorneys. It goes on and on and on. It just goes on and on and on. The bottom line is that we have a top expert. We're very, very grateful to have him with us. Adam, thank you so much for being with us and spending the time.
Isha, thank you for having me on. It's an honor, and I'm glad to be here.
It's a pleasure, and I look forward to this conversation. You have no idea how much. You know what? Before we even get anywhere, if you could give us and everybody who's listening a 2-minute, we call it elevated pitch, about your firm, what you guys do, in a very quick way.
The elevator pitch is very meaningful to me because I was able to get one of our best litigators. You know, we're only as good as who we hire. And it's not me, it's a team. You know, we have we have 31 or 30 attorneys here. But I got one of Batman has Robin and Tonto at the Long Ranger, if you're old enough. So I got John Desiderio in an elevator pitch because we were in the same building, and he's been here 22 years later. So I like elevator pitches. So I am mostly a real estate litigator, although we do all kinds of real estate law. We only do real estate law. We do it only in one state. We used to do it only in one city until COVID. And then the Fortune 100 company said, Adam, it's all by video anyway. You don't need to travel. The judges already have this book every time, everywhere we go. So you can go to Rochester, Syracuse, Poughkeepsie, New Paltz, et cetera. And we did. So now we're all over the state of New York litigating and doing transactions. The practice opened in 2000, and we are known for hiring or not hiring Ivy League graduates out of law school. We hire street lawyers. We hire people that are interested in who grew up poor. We're interested in being successful. And are aggressive. We're an aggressive firm that sets new trends, sets new law, and we're only as good as our last case. And I believe I'm the hardest working attorney that's ever lived.
That's incredible. And you know what? I loved what you said. We're not going for Ivy League. We're going for hungry attorneys. And by the way, the location of your office, I think, is like a sort of a testimony of it, meaning it's the symbol of freedom. You gotta. If you could tell everybody where you are, it's. I think this is the beauty of it, and everybody can understand that anything is possible, but you have to really work hard.
Right. Well, no. But I mean, it's not only that. I'm looking at the Statue of Liberty right now, which has Miss Lazarus' poem. She's buried in a Jewish cemetery in Brooklyn. She died in 1887. Give me your hunger, you're poor, you're tired, which is phenomenal praise. But also my ancestors who came from Russia and Ukraine all 16 sides. I'm 23andMe tells me I'm 100% Jewish. I want my money back because Ashkenazi Jewish only goes back a certain amount of years, and we, you know, should be able to go back. Should be your DNA should be able to go back farther. But my ancestors came. They didn't. Ellis Island just opened, so they, I believe, they came right in front of my building here, to the water here. And I know two of them were stowaways. They didn't have the money to come over. And that's, they snuck into New York and went to Brooklyn.
That's amazing. Tell me something. Before we start digging into the story of real estate law, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you started the firm. Let's go back in time. Enter the DeLorean and go back and see, you know, and tell us how you got into this whole thing.
So I worked for two firms, two real estate firms before I started. One called Winsig & Winsig, my first job. I was so excited to get a job because I couldn't get a job for 9 months. I was working part-time jobs in real estate, but I only wanted to do one type of law. I wanted to litigate and wanted to do real estate. So it was very limited, and I wouldn't take a job other than that. And then Winsig & Winsig was four attorneys, which was fantastic because they got to do a lot of really great things right away. And then I realized after 2 years that I wasn't complete. You know, like the Star Wars analogy, my Jedi training wasn't completed. I kept getting these questions on landlord tenant. And I couldn't do that without, you really can't practice real estate law in New York without knowing landlord tenant. I think that every transactional attorney and litigator, I think every litigator needs to practice transactional law and every transactional lawyer needs to practice litigation, but they both need to know landlord tenant law to a degree. So I looked into what is the best landlord tenant law firm in the year 1988. And the answer was this guy named Danny Finkelstein. He was the guy. And I called him up because I've always was very confident and we were a lot alike. We're so, I saw him right before COVID and we had lunch and the firm hired me, and that was the landlord tenant firm, and I completed my training. I thought, when I decided to start my own firm, I thought my boss was just trying to keep me from not quitting, but he said to me, he said, I think you need 2 more years training in co-op condo law, and he was right. I needed that. So I actually started it probably a year or two. I started it my 6th year out. I should have started it by 8 years out to complete the training in co-op condo law, which I knew, but not as well as I should have. In fact, we still don't do offering plans. We critique them, we sue for them, we sue on them, but we don't draft them. And that's something that I could have learned in those 2 years.
And from that point, where was the point where you started your own firm?
So I had a case in Westchester. It was a real estate / mafia case. And I was going against a firm that worked for the Podolsky family. And they said, listen, the Podolskys have a lot of work. I'd like you to meet them. And they have office space for you. And if you do work for them, we'll give you free office space. I said, sounds great. So they gave me a part-time receptionist. They gave me a phone. I just had to bring my laptop, which I did. So I had this small office, but they got the better end of the deal looking back years later. I was killing myself for them, and rent wasn't that high back then. Yeah, office rent.
Different times, obviously, right. Different times. So tell me, so since that point, meaning obviously I got a pretty general idea of it. And meaning from the story, you can tell that you were a hustler. Obviously, meaning you also found where the, I guess, you know, either call it pain points or the weaknesses, and you mastered them and you made them your superpowers. And one of them was landlord tenant in New York, and the other one was the co-condo law. But basically, you became an expert. That's what made it happen. Tell me something. When you started your own firm and you started going for it, going forward, you're talking about 2000, we're 22 years later. Where are you guys now? You have X amount of attorneys. you guys litigate, law, what type of asset classes? Tell us a little bit about your operation.
All right, so as far as the real estate litigation, amazingly, and I'm always amazed by it, well, we represent some of the biggest companies in the world. We represent a lot of the biggest real estate developers in the world, the real estate companies, period. But we're only as good as our last case, so we have to keep succeeding. Because if you hire one of the largest firms in New York and the general counsel hires them and they lose, then it must be the firm's fault or the facts of the case. But if you take a chance on a firm like ours that people haven't heard of, Adam Eichmann Bailey PC, and we lose, then the general counsel's job could be on the line. So I'm always amazed that these hundreds of general counsels or a thousand general counsels that use us take that chance. Maybe not today that we're more of a household name, but back 20 years ago, you know, that had to be a big risk for them. And I thank them today, and a lot of them are still clients. And I'm so impressed that they did that. And I owe them such a great debt of gratitude. But okay, so right away off the bat, I start my own firm. We're doing landlord tenant. We're doing condo co-op litigation. We're doing condo co-op general counsel. We have a big transactional practice that does general counsel, but we're not afraid to litigate. So a lot of co-op condo general counsel is a shareholder in a wealthy building suing the board. So they may have insurance, but then we're taking on that, which will take the insurance money, but then the co-op's covering the rest. So that's a common thing. Landlord tenant is a mass production, which we have here, where you're strategizing on how to improve the income of a building. And in 2019, the government took a lot of money from us and money from legal fees, because the landlords have no longer an incentive to deregulate a building. Meaning they changed the law where by removing a tenant because they're a nuisance or they're not following the rules because they're not living there full time and they're illegally subletting or they're using it as Airbnb, no longer does the landlord have a big incentive to remove them. Therefore, that takes away a lot of our cases. In any event, there's still an incentive to run a building well. And so we're still extremely busy. Actually, we keep hiring more attorneys. We have a large foreclosure practice. We represent lenders.
Wow.
And somehow, even with the moratoriums, we were able to do evictions, commercial and residential. And I still haven't printed how we did a lot of those. The one thing I did print, the mayor the next month banned it. And foreclosures, we just kept going. I mean, we just were able to
So you basically hired by financial institutions.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very, very interesting. Tell me something, the switch that you had, meaning the pivot that you had to make in 2018, how did that affect you guys, putting it on the ground in terms of the cases that you guys got?
Which year?
2019, sorry, yeah.
It didn't affect us too much. It didn't have a big effect because we figured there were still ways around the law where you could still turn your building into a profit center. For example, every time you demolish a building, you could build a new one as a free market. Or you could take 75%, revitalize the building, and turn around 75% of the major capital improvements. And if you redo those or put in new ones, then there would be free market as well. There's also other things to do. So we were still able to, and if you watch all the construction going around, that's what, landlords just shifted. So what's happening in our economy is because the laws aren't clear and they haven't said, well, combining units make it deregulated or combining a unit takes you out of rent regulation, that's causing a lot of landlords to keep units empty, which is causing rents to go way too high. The rent is too damn high, as the phrase goes. So it's unfortunate that our state government is hurting not only real estate, but it's hurting renters by making laws that make rents too high where the average person can't afford them, or even the average person who's making good money can't afford them. and not the blame goes to one place and not at the state legislature. So my advice to everyone is make sure you vote and learn about who you should vote for. Because the people that are in office today, probably every one of them who voted for these tenant laws should be voted out of office.
It's amazing how it affected the real estate market, without a doubt. But you are, I want to ask you something. You guys are definitely, and you said that you're focused on the city. Now that you are obviously more around, but New York City is always affected in a way that is unprecedented, especially in the pandemic, which is a topic, you know, of its own. What I want to ask you is, what type of litigation you guys do nowadays? Meaning, what type of cases come to your, meaning, on your table nowadays that you could say it's different than it used to be 3 years ago?
But there's always something new. There's always something that's more exciting. What's down a little bit is we're experts on adverse possession and easements and title boundary cases. Those have dropped a little bit. There's less title claims than there used to be. We represent just about every underwriter that's in existence. And there's less title claims than there used to be, although we're very busy with that. I would think that during COVID, people would be home more, so they would notice that the person built a fence in the backyard and fight over it. You know, built the fence in their land and right. Fight over it. But that hasn't come to fruition yet. I'm getting calls on that, but I'm not seeing a litigation, which is rare. I'm expecting that. So I thought that would be a big increase in cases. You know, disputes over land is my favorite thing to litigate. It's very exciting, and we have really big cases. We made new law in a lot of areas in that. And we wrote a book on it. This is the latest book. Mike Berry, First American, and I is my co-editor. Real Estate Titles is 3,000 pages.
Real Estate Titles. Where can people find the book?
Amazon. Born to the New York State Bar Association. Yeah. So that, I thought there would be an increase in cases, and there's not. So we have a good amount of cases on those real estate disputes and liens and mechanic liens and adverse possession and easements and people fighting over real estate, but not as much as I thought there would be. There's a large increase in new construction cases, badly built buildings or fights over completing structures or developers needing to are wanting to build what they want to build and the government getting in the way. And those cases are fascinating and interesting, and we're right in the heart of those. We've been very successful. The only thing that gets me really angry is when I see a client of ours hire another firm for that, because I don't know that we do that. That nothing gets me angrier than that. Because that means I'm not doing a good job of marketing. We don't advertise. But we're not doing a good job of getting our name out there for those things. I saw one of our clients hire another firm and they lost. And that even gets me angrier, because I saw the arguments they put in front of the judge, and I know the judge very well, and that's not what the judge wants to hear.
What I wanted to ask you is, when you got a case on a development, what do you see mostly as a meaning? When are you guys hired most times? In the dispute between the developer and the municipality, or between the developer and the construction, meaning the contractor, subcontractors, meaning what is the main problem that you guys see that are constantly coming about, meaning the financiers? Where are the disputes for the most part coming up, especially lately?
So that's a four-part question. The first part is, when do we get hired? So we found the law. And in the Real Deals new book, it says that we're the pioneers of finding that law, which we're honored to be in the book. The book is called The New Kings in New York. It's called the Interstate Land Sales Full Disclosure Act. So at that time, we were representing homeowners who had barely built buildings and getting them fixed. We were only representing homeowners at the time, and we had not switched to representing developers from the years 2000 to 2008 or 2009. So when I found this law, any building built over 100 units that had not been given certain disclosures, and only one developer that I know did, we went up to the highest, second highest court in the land on it, they had to give their money back to the person that signed the contract, rescission, meaning they had to offer them the unit back and give their money back, which is not what most of the clients wanted. Most of the clients just wanted a discount of 40%, because that's how much the banks, because of the crisis in 2008, that's what the banks were lending. They were lending 40% less or 30% less. We were just trying to make deals and make sure the buildings were built well. So we had a combination. So because of that, every developer became scared of us. And they were worried about what we're doing next. Because after that, we found something else and something else. So we kept finding things. So every developer was hiring us, step one, to review their offering plans, ironic, to review them and say, if we were going to sue you, what would we find? So we'd give them drafts to make them bulletproof, in our humble opinion, make them bulletproof. So then that was, that wouldn't cost a lot. So that's to conflict us out and then to get a better offering plan. So that's step one. Okay. So yes. Part two of your question is what are people fighting over the most? So you have one of the biggest fights is between partners. The biggest fight in the world is families that where the patriarch dies, and then you have fights between family members. That's one of the biggest fights of all time. And those battles cost a lot of money, and they're very hard to settle, because they're usually more about, I only take cases based on money. I don't do principle. I don't believe in that. I always tell people, don't hire me for principle. You're never gonna like me for that. Hire me for a goal. You have to have a goal, and that goal has to be about money or winning something that I could tangibly get for you. A home or a house or a building. So, but the family fights are about money, but back in those is the third child that didn't get loved as much as the others, or another that got wrote out of the will or the trust, they're all trusts. So then you have those, okay, so that battle. Then you have the battles between the lenders that cut off funding, another example, that cut off funding, that were required to give out money, or not required to, debatably, to give out money to keep the project going, and they didn't. So that's another battle. Then you have those where they did give out the money, but the developer couldn't find enough money to finish it, or they needed others. Then you have those where the developer brought in new partners, but they didn't sign great agreements, and all of a sudden the new lenders are coming in to foreclose on these developers that aren't following it, or they're finding ways to close. So these are many battles up until the time. Then once the building is being built, you have new ones because they're fighting with the contractors over building it well or building it right or what, or building it timely or building it under budget. And then that's another whole set of fights. Then you have, once the building's built, you're signing the contracts, you have people trying to get out of the contract, you have people having defects. No building is ever built perfectly. Every building ever built has problems. The good builders fix them. And then that's the next one. So in 2010, we decided we're gonna represent both sides. We saw that going against all these developers, that the other attorneys always had it easier. It's easier to collect money. It's easier not to deal with hundreds of people at a time. It's easier to deal with one person or one general counsel. So we decided we're going to do both sides, and we did. And now we represent a lot of developers.
The first thing you spoke about, and that is really interesting, you said that certain developers, due to the fact that they are afraid to being, meaning they want to prevent being sued later on, so they come and hire you in order to get all the great ideas in order not to get there. So are they hiring you on top of their own commercial real estate attorney? Meaning you?
I'm a real estate litigator.
After the contract is being made?
Oh, we don't do commercial transactional real estate. We don't do big buildings. We don't do offering plans. So right. We're not competing against any of the people that do offering plans or that do contracts for big buildings. We don't do that here. we do closings for small time homes or small time leases, and we do bank closings, but we're not doing transactional. We're not a transactional firm.
Right.
We're a litigation
firm.
Yeah.
That, I mean, I got that. That was
so the reason I do the small time closings and once in a while a small time lease is because my grandma Betty, who lived during the Great Depression, taught me that I should always fear the depression that will come and always do what people need. So everybody needs to buy a home, everybody needs to litigate, everybody needs to foreclose, everybody needs to evict someone, everybody needs to defend themselves. So that's how the firm is based on. It's
the bread and butter. Yeah.
Bread and butter, and it's also based on representing condos and co-ops. Right. Everything a condo co-op needs. So that's how that got started. But we are known for real estate litigation. So we're not conflicting with any of those firms. But they're coming in to conflict us out. It seems like every 2 weeks I'm getting a conflict motion. For example, right now in a really big case, 2 weeks in a row, two big cases actually, they said they had a conversation with me 2 years ago and they told me every secret about the case so they could conflict me out. The first motion is already decided. We're not conflicted out. I didn't remember the phone call. I remember speaking to them, but never, I don't know what it was about. The second one, they didn't even tell me about the case. They just interviewed me on whether or not I knew enough about bankruptcy law to be their attorney on this. Never got into the facts of the case, but that motion is pending. But the goal of every law firm is to conflict me out of the case. Seems to be the new thing. You know, let's speak to Adam for 5 minutes and then try to conflict them out.
Amazing.
Can't control these things. Yeah.
The amount of stuff that you guys deal with is really, meaning pretty wide scope. Going back again, meaning you have to be an expert in something, right? And it seems like you guys, throughout the time, you just started to pick up all kind of know-hows. If you could tell me what type of bumps you had on the way, and in order to pivot, or in order to come out and say, we're experts of that too, and we're experts of that too. What you guys had to do in order to gain all this knowledge and to be able to penetrate all these sections of law in real estate?
It wasn't me. One of the things that I've been halfway good at is hiring. So what I did was I tried hiring, and one of the attorneys here calls it stalking. But I went out after the best attorneys in the land, and I went after to hire them.
That's beautiful.
So I knew that I don't have time to do every trial and do every type of law.
For sure.
So I believe I have two things. Dove Triman is considered the best landlord tenant attorney in town. He's written 96 books on landlord tenant law. You know, one after the other. But at the same time as you have the elderly attorneys now that are getting older, they've been here for 20 years. You have a whole crop of young attorneys. This is their first job. They started as externs and they were at the top of their class. And I noticed 20 years ago that how does a firm where no one's ever heard of hire them? How do we get them? And I realized what was going on. The other firms weren't hiring females. And I'm a grade snob. I wanted to hire from the fourth rate or third rate schools at the top of the class. And I realized that the only way to get top of the class was to collect the resumes. So I collected the resumes and they were female. I don't care if you're black, white, male, female, not of any sex. I just wanted talent. So it wound up, we had hired a whole bunch of females, and now they're stars. If you go on our website right now, you'll see these female stars that are the best in their profession.
I love it.
That are completely loyal, and we are also very diverse. We just won an award for diversity. Why? Because the other firms weren't hiring them 20 years ago or 15 years ago, and now they're senior attorneys.
That's amazing. Where'd you get that idea from? To find talent where everybody else was looking for Ivy League schools and the traditional type of stuff, and you came and said, I have a way to do it. Where did you come up with that idea?
Oh no, it's called survival. So I wanted to emulate myself. I was born in Bayside, Queens. My parents lost their job. jobs when I was 5 years old. The Oshawa Brownsville teacher strike in 1975. I'm 52 years old. I just turned 52 on April 27th. And I wanted to emulate myself. I grew up poor, but I had a good education, basically self-taught or people giving me books. And I don't know, actually, I didn't have a great formal education. I had a good independent education. And then we had to move to California for a while. And then I had busing, so I got to read on the bus. So through this and through overcoming adversity and growing up poor, I realized this is a phenomenal recipe, adversity and the willingness to become successful and getting good grades. This is a phenomenal recipe for being a good attorney. So I just wanted to emulate myself. And I remember dating. And I was always interested in dating smart people. And I remember dating Ivy League people that were doctors or going to Ivy League schools. And I remember they were not interested in going to class. They weren't getting graded at their Ivy League schools. And they didn't have their motivation like the second and third and fourth tier law schools had. So I realized, wow, what an opportunity. How can I? So I invented something else. What I have still going on today is an externship program. So people apply to be externs at our firm. It's like the Hunger Games with no one dying. They apply to be externs. We take the best externs for the fall and spring semesters, and the best externs get summer jobs, and the best summer associates get full-time jobs. And that's how all these people that are still, that are here, been here 10, 15 years, that's how they started here.
Wow.
We have very low turnover. We've actually had our first turnover attorneys during COVID, which I was shocked about, but one left who was with me for 16 years, because of the extra 20 minutes up where I, okay, I want to get him back. It's hard to deal with. You know, I can't imagine him fitting in somewhere else because he was unique. But, you know, that's life.
Wow. That's incredible. All right. Listen, we spoke about a bunch of topics and we could speak for another 3 or 4 hours, but we want to cut it short eventually. We want to let you go back to your work. I'll tell you one thing. I learned a lot from this conversation. I learned a couple of things. I learned, first of all, that what you learned from your grandmother, the idea of bread and butter, meaning we all know it, but it's beautiful to hear it from a successful law firm. There's bread and butter, and then there's the cream. There's the knowledge of the residential real estate, the feet in the ground, what people need on the daily basis, and then the commercial real estate, which is the know-how on top of it. There's the idea of not running after Ivy League schools and getting those lawyers, but to find talent in the places where people didn't originally, today, obviously people do look for it, but originally didn't look for it. And I love it, meaning it's entrepreneurship in law, meaning it's like the, I would say the flagship type of entrepreneurship within law. And I love the concept. I always tell people, meaning we both obviously come from the Jewish community. People say a lot of Jewish lawyers, right? A lot of Jewish lawyers. And people think, okay, it's like a thing. Like Jews are born lawyers. No, they're not. People forget that the immigrants that came to the country, to America, to Israel, to everyone in the world, but we're talking about America now. We're talking about immigrants who came before the Holocaust and mainly meaning after World War II, they came, they barely spoke any English and they didn't know anything and they couldn't barely do anything. And they hustled and hustled and the kids hustled and hustled. And that's how things became what they become. But your story is just no less. I love it.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. Thank you so much from the heart. Yeah, but I'm only as good as today.
Right, as you said, it's the last case. And that's always looking to the future, looking to the next case and looking to whoever needs a good attorney, a litigator attorney with experience. Adam, if you could tell everybody where they can find you, whether it's LinkedIn or there's a site, you guys can see the links.
I guess you just Google our name and everything comes up, but
yes, it is.
Our website is www.alblawfirm.com. And the phone number is 212-825-0365. All calls and emails are returned within 24 hours, unless there's a conflict in the case, then you won't hear from us.
All right, you guys are in it.
Share the conflicts.
You guys, absolutely. Adam, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having us.
100%. Thank you so much. And you guys, I hope you enjoyed it and learned tons from it. And obviously, you heard what the phone number is. You saw the links. And you guys, I'll see you in the next show. Take care.
Thank you again.
Hey guys, thanks for joining me in this CRE Shark Eye show. I hope you enjoyed it. And go subscribe, download, do whatever you guys need to do. And I'll see you in the next episode. Take care of yourselves.